Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminators Podcast, your one-stop shop for quarantine competitive 40K in our strange times we have right now. With me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello.
And by special guest, we have this week, Archon Skari.
Burn, heretic. And as you burn, know that I do not cleanse you out of any desire to save your soul or shrive you of your mortal sins. I put you to the torch because I hate you. Because all that you are and all that you have done revolts me. And because those who stray from the light of the Emperor deserve only annihilation. Taken from the Adeptus Sororitas Codex. You're welcome.
Now that. So who says we don't talk about lore on the show? That's awesome. So first thing right off the bat is many who are listening, and I want to thank all of you for listening, because yeah, ever since COVID-19, yeah, our downloads are way up at this point. But Skari, I have to ask you, because you already do a lot of content, most of it from your own home, your private studio. Now I put on like more, you know, mainstream, like my ABC News or, you know, Good Morning America and all this stuff, even sportscasters, and they're all like, look at me, I'm broadcasting from home. You sit back and laugh and go, dude, that's my job. I do that all the time.
Yeah, I go, you know what? Get in line, folks. it's actually been a little bit more challenging because I normally have a routine that I follow, and that's helped me sort of like create content from home and whatnot. And now that my son, who's 8, is at home 24/7, It's changed the routine. So I've had to adapt to a routine that was working really well to sort of adjust that aspect. Since my wife is still working, she's deemed an essential worker, working like mental health services. So, you know, it definitely has changed a lot. So they're sitting at their homes, the cameras on them. It's what I like though, is that a lot of the production value for these things are like, you know, you see better stuff on like YouTube from like bloggers and Redditors who've literally been doing this stuff forever. And it's literally like a webcam and them in their little studio. I'm like, that's literally what we do every day.
I think the most hilarious thing is our, Ray, I'm not sure what station you watch here locally, but our local weather girl that we watch, clearly she's not with her usual makeup team. The hair is flat. She's in, then they put like a large screen TV so she can make it look like she's got the logo and the weather map and at home. And I'm like, yeah, no, we do this all the time at home. What's your problem?
I don't watch the...
It's probably a smart thing. There's not much going on. But anyway, so, well, the good news is yes, our esteemed governor has made sure that Ray and I stay in our essential jobs as well. So we have not gotten quite as much hobby time. So nothing more important than getting the Exterminatus podcast out to the masses. Thank you, Governor. Appreciate that. But Ray, you got a little bit of painting done. You showed me a little blurb earlier today.
Yes, Gary, saw it too. That librarian. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Starting to get pretty good at the... Thank you. The only thing that sucks is when I paint these things, so I'm using the contrast over metallics. The only thing that sucks when I take these pictures is it flattens it out.
Doesn't really do it justice.
Nope.
Is that because of the lighting or is it just the camera itself?
I think it has something to do with the camera. It just doesn't quite get that metallic.
I did a whole Jane Zarr and Banshees and painted metallic with Black Templar contrast over it to give it like that really like dark metallic look. It looks fantastic.
Ooh, that does sound cool. It's just about that's how much hobby time with, you know, said the whole, your whole schedule has been turned upside down. Have you been able to get any extra hobby time in at this point?
Well, the hobby time has been the same. If anything, I've been playing a lot more video games than I have lately. Tabletop Simulator or, you know, coaching or being on the Discord or, just thinking of really cool videos to do to sort of like get people up to speed on like the game in general. I started a little ITC, how to play ITC series on the YouTube channel. And so that's sort of keeping me busy. I'm going to add to it as we go, you know, how to rap, how to do like, how to get out of raps. There's going to be like a whole bunch of little things I'm doing. So my mind's really been turning a lot and kind of, I might not be getting extra hobby time, but I'm getting the same amount of hobby time and then plus time that I'm using for a variety of other stuff. Mostly brainstorming.
Sounds exciting. We'll have to keep watching. And where can they find all these videos?
You can just go to the YouTube channel on Skardcast. That's SKARED CAST, Skardcast on YouTube. All the links for all the other stuff is there, from Patreon all the way to the Facebook page or, you know, all the stuff that we do with the Art of War as well. But that's all the playlists are up there. And we do actually on Twitch, we're doing a live stream every Monday through Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's called the Isolation Station. So you can come down, get some hobby supplies, and paint with us for a couple hours every day during the week. Right now, I converted and built up a little Dark Eldar patrol. And this week coming up, I'll be painting brand new Drazar and his Incubi.
Very cool stuff. Drazar, definitely a popular inclusion in many Drukhari lists, so it'll be cool to watch that.
Yeah, he is a boss.
How have you run into him lately, you know, in terms of supporting him and how to use him properly?
Oh man, if you're giving, like, you're asking me to discuss, you know, how to weave an intricate tapestry of death and destruction here. But in broad terms, he runs around on foot, and then I try and make sure that when he charges stuff, he bounces around from like unit to unit or character to character to really kind of get to the juicy bits and just let him loose with onslaught and hope that he just like rolls enough sixes and those four damage attacks just like cut through stuff. Super fun.
Okay. So it's interesting because I think maybe I've been misusing him then because I use him as intercessor mower because he's got that flat two damage and that sometimes works and sometimes it doesn't work. And I'm like, what am I doing wrong here? So
yeah, it does. It works great. If they don't have like an apothecary nearby that's giving everybody a 5+ feel no pain, for example, then he's fantastic. Mm-hmm. However, he's much better at going in and killing the apothecary that's giving everybody the bonus and then bouncing to the intercessors and killing all the intercessors.
Fair enough. All right. So a couple things we want to talk about this week. We talked a little bit about TSS. You've had some experience with it, so we'll talk a little bit some of your tips for playing on TTS. Excuse me, I keep calling it the wrong thing. Tabletop Simulator, available on stream. And also talk a little bit of Saga of the Beast. And then, of course, the preview that Games Workshop gave on Saturday. Well, that was pretty short when it comes to 40K talk. So let's get into that first before our first break. So I guess this was supposed to be part of the Adepticon tease. Now, the good tease was at the very end. They said they only shown us half of it. So I'm like, great. Anytime you want to get to the other stuff, feel free. Because not a lot of 40K in content once again for 2 weeks in a row. But I know, Sarkar, you've been playing some Age of Sigmar a little bit as well. What do you think of the new battle cattle?
I think it's magnificent. But I'm really, really happy that, you know, we can finally take our elves out to pasture and make sure that they have a rocking good time. But having a mountain, it's like a combination of a yak and, like, you know, a minotaur, which I think is great. It's like a yak mountain minotaur thing. So I think it's awesome. I, you know, all in all, I'm a huge GW fanboy just in general. So if you're looking for anything negative, it's not going to come out of my mouth. I think, you know, you can either love it or hate it. The aesthetic wise, yeah, you know what? Yeah, sometimes they get really creatively licensed with their, you know, big hats or whatnot, which is fine. You know, I guess that's just a very Python-esque way of looking at life. In terms of good old British humor. But as an Age of Sigmar player, I'm excited for new factions. I'm excited for new rules. I'll tell you, my kid's really excited about them because he plays elves. So he's looking forward to getting some high elf spearmen, bowmen guys.
Okay. So no, I was not fishing for any negatives. Actually, my biggest thing was being an outsider to Age of Sigmar. I look at this and I go, okay, I guess here's where I'm stuck with it. Ray was trying to twist my arm once again to, you should try Age of Sigmar. And what I don't want to do is play one of the retread factions, you know, just dust off somebody's old lizard men and call them Seraphim or something like that. So when I saw that they're redoing the High Elves in this new format, I go, oh, okay, is that a welcome addition? Or is that sort of, are the Age of Sigmar purists going like, we had a good thing going, why are you bringing the old stuff back? So,
well, you're talking to some guy who plays Tomb Kings. So I still have my old Tomb King army. They're all based on circles now. And that's what I play. My son and I play, we're having a blast. Like, it's just a very simple game to pick up. Even my 8-year-old kind of like understands it. but it's very intricate when it comes to the combos and things you can build based on like your faction and whatnot. I feel like it's a nice refined 40K in a lot of ways, with bows and arrows and spears and giant monsters. And I think its appeal is just, it's a different appeal, and I like it. It's just fun to roll dice for a couple hours.
Good to hear. Yeah, I'm still, my biggest thing is time. So it's not that I'm putting down the game. I'm curious, as this came out, I was like, okay, interesting. May not be the faction for me, but I'm curious how that affects the whole meta, for lack of a better term. Because I understand Slaanesh and... for a while there, Zeech were pretty much on top of the heap for a long time. So
that is true. Well, GW's just milking it now.
So other new releases. Oh God. Switching gears a little bit. The game I am near and dear to my heart, this is the one that got me into Games Workshop in the first place, was Blood Bowl. And I see the Treemen come back. And at first people are like, big deal, but it is actually a big deal because the Treemen are essential to the elf build, so it gives them a heavy hitter, which is a big deal when it comes to that particular game. But I was wondering how they were going to do it, because the treemen that are used in Sigmar are way too large for the Blood Bowl pitch. So these new models, I have to say, are very intriguing looking, and I'm trying to figure out a way I can incorporate them into 40K somehow.
It's like a little stubby tree, right? Like, it doesn't look like a big tree. It's like a little shrub tree. This is like built to just take a punch, you know what I mean? And until, of course, it sits down and puts its roots down, and then it's like, okay, now it's rooted, you know, which I know is something that happens in Blood Bowl. Yeah. In 40K, though, you could use them as objectives, or you could use them as grotesques, you know, anything that's big and like that does for great grotesque conversions, or ogrins or bullgrins, or I don't know, you could argue Wraithguard, for example. You know, give him a gun, like a helmet.
You could. I was thinking something demonic as well you could probably get away with.
Like a spawn.
I didn't think of spawn. I was thinking of the Lincoln Logs, the Nurgle Beasts. I forgot that there was another option you could do.
Yeah, the Slugs of Nurgle or whatever that called.
But I do like the spawn idea. That's pretty cool. All right, I'm sold. Spawn it is. Spawn Tide, I'm bringing it back. Those of you remember,
they are good. Very efficient use of points, that's for sure. Like, in terms of wounds per point, spawn actually give you a great wounds per point count.
Yeah, we were joking about the old days when you could join characters to units. Corn Lord on Juggernaut with Axe of Blind Fury surrounded by a full unit of spawn. That would have been perfect. So... other news, for those who are still into the Horus Heresy, some new models here for Word Bearers, which I have to admit look pretty cool. Not that familiar with Horus Heresy these days, but...
those Word Bearer miniatures, I love how they've got the runes etched in their armor.
Yeah.
Like, that whole 30K, if anything, has given us like an excellent like masterclass of miniatures. And I think that alone is worth taking a look at them. And a lot of them just port really well into 40K in terms of the miniatures and whatnot for, you know, stand-ins and conversions. So there, anytime they release something like that, like the Dark Angels models they released, for example, gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. And then they are with another Chaos release.
So I'm pretty excited about these, even though they said great way to maybe convert them over. I'm thinking, like you said, with all those runes, some neat glow effects, those things would just leap off the table. That'd be really awesome.
Yeah. And you know, some, like a lot of the times the paint jobs that GW do aren't the most creative paint jobs. You know, they're very just standardized to what they've released. And then you get these professional painters or people who have crazy imaginations go above and beyond, and you look at it and go, whoa, that is cool.
Yeah. This is definitely one of those. So if you're looking for an entry in a painting competition, once we resume some back to our previous normal, you might want to take a look at. As I joked last week, Middle Earth role strategy battle game. No idea this was still in print, but we have more new models.
Eomer and then the other guy, right? Or the other two little guys or whatnot. By the way, the fact that these miniatures are in plastic are incredible, because they look really cool.
It is pretty amazing. That's one thing I keep forgetting, that they are in plastic, because I remember the old metal models for when Lord of the Rings first came out. So it's like, okay.
But, I played it one time, and all I remember is I had a giant armored troll murder everyone.
Oh my god. I've yet to, I think I played it, I think the demo version, I think that's all I played. So one of these days I'll try it out. Another preview for Angels of Death. I'm just like, release this already. This, every preview has just been stunning. And I think there's another reason between this and the short story in Saga of the Beast has rekindled my love for Battlefleet Gothic. Another fleet battle game here between the Tyranids and the Blood Angels in that really stylized CGI format. Absolutely brilliant. I cannot wait for the show to come out.
I'm looking at, and then they released some of the artwork of some of the like higher resolution, sort of like very detailed shows they're working on.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait. I like the license, the GW, like the 40K license and the Age of Sigmar license could go so far in general. Like, I just cannot wait for them to just open the floodgates and just be like, here, consume, you know, and hopefully, you know, especially these times now that they're putting investment on stuff that can be consumed that isn't necessarily going out and like playing a game of 40K, you know, will pay off in dividends, I would assume.
Plus, but it looks cool. It looks really cool. It's a great, and it just, yeah, it's such a great license, and I just hope it breaks out sooner or later, you know, just, I think it'd be huge, so.
Well, that, and then Astartes Part 5 happened, and that was incredible as well.
So a lot of cool stuff. Really cool to see that.
Well, that's not to do with the pre-release preview, but still, it's just more 40K content to consume.
Well, now that you mentioned that Engine War had one of those preview stories, and you hear about, you know, the one tech priest investigating the other tech priest, and they kind of infighting among the Mechanicus, and there's some crazy device and all that. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And then like the next like 48 hours later, there's a preview video for Cult Mechanicus, and it's the bad guy from that short story. It's, I lead the charge. I'm like, wait a minute, we know what he's up to. So there's so much out there in terms of content. I hope it comes to light sooner or later. So be awesome. Back to Age of Sigmar real quick. Sons of Bahamut. This is another one of those I kind of go, wait a minute, are we just retreading giants again? Because these models have been around for a while. So
I wouldn't be surprised if they either release a new multi-part kit or something for the giants to make different types of giants armed differently. You know, maybe considering the technology of plastic molds and plastic models has come a long way since they released the giant kit, which was a huge like marvel of its time. You know, now they're releasing things like, you know, some of those Age of Sigmar monsters and stuff that are just crazy, like detailed and very, like the movement on the models is nuts considering it's on like a mold.
Yeah, I still think about like the old high elf dragons that were made of metal. Putting those things together was like, compared to what the plastic ones look like now, it's night and day. All right, so we've teased you guys long enough. So yes, Psychic Awakenings Pariah apparently is the next book. Lots of guesswork on what would be in there, and I have to say, I don't think anybody got this right. So Ray, you want to tell me about who these people are?
Yeah, so goes back, I think, 20 years to a comic book called Demonifuge. I haven't read it myself, but there's two characters throughout that series. One, I kind of couldn't help but laugh because it basically reused that last name. It's really bad when you look at the name and it's gone. Oh, there it is. Ephrael Stern.
Apparently she's some sort of sister of battle of some kind. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, she is a beast. Goes around. It's like kicks butt. Everybody's after her. And she's like against the universe.
And she's accompanied by, of all things,
apparently so both of these models are absolutely insanely cool. I was just looking at this like, what is that? So a couple things beg to question right off the bat. Okay, obviously Stern's going to be included in a Sisters of Battle, but what about the sidekick here, the Harlequin? Can they be included in a Sisters of Battle list? Are they together as one data sheet? Not really clear on how that would work together.
Well, it says
also,
it says you'll be able to field her alongside the Sisters of Battle or with any Imperium force, and she'll be accompanied by the Harlequin Companion.
Yeah, very interesting. So I wonder if the reverse is true. I can bring him in to the Harlequins, and then she can come along. Who knows?
We'll find out. I'm going to guess.
No. But I think it's an interesting trend now. We've seen Fabius Bile. We've seen these two characters. It seems like more of a character-focused release over the past couple new tidbits as opposed to full new units and stuff like that. I wonder if that's kind of what's the future or what's going on here.
Well, they kind of did that with the Rise of the Phoenix, right? Which was Jainzar, Drazar, Incubi, Howling Banshees, and the whole release was kind of based around those. And so, I guess coming around to it as well, like new kits or having it centered around a couple of models is a good way to kind of give them a starting point. The models themselves look great, so hopefully the rules sort of work well with them. It's funny, sometimes they, when they did the Sister of Silence and the Custodes duo that they released, mm-hmm. they can't even be used in like a Battleforged army or something because the keywords don't match up, which I thought was really funny. But hopefully they don't make that mistake.
One can only hope. That was a bit embarrassing. So keep our eyes open for those and as any rules come up for that. And then the other bit of psychic. So before we go jump ahead there, I'm getting all excited. The interesting part is the most common internet pundits were saying Pariah were all hoping that the Necrons would be coming back and the famous third or fourth edition unit Pariah would be coming back to the Necron Codex. Can we rule that out at this point, or is that still a possibility from what we've seen?
The child in me says I hope they put the Pariahs back in, especially with if they miss out on using a book named Pariah to put Pariahs back in the army and have really really cool new plastics for the Necrons. I don't know. One can hope, but it would be really cool to see the Pariahs come back.
And for those who aren't familiar with the Pariahs, go ahead, Ray.
I was going to say, and here's another odd thing that kind of goes with that. And it's important we mention this now, not just talk about this for 5 minutes and then move on to that. But the Psychic Awakening rules for Harlequins, which is one of the factions that's been talked about for being in Pariah, because it looks like it'll be the last one. Their rules are actually going to be in a white door.
Yeah, and Harlequins too, I believe.
Harlequins and Deathwatch. So whose rules are going to end up in the book at this rate? It won't, there's
just I'm assuming it'll be. Necron. I certainly, who knows, but I hope so. Sisters of Battle, maybe, since they are releasing that model.
Yeah, I was a little confused by that announcement. It's like, okay, it's going to be in. So does that mean they're cutting a book from the list? Did they print all the books and go, hey, where's the Harlequins? I knew we forgot somebody. I mean, what happened?
I think they realized. Because there's four factions, which are, if counting Sisters, you get Sisters, Deathwatch, Harlequins, and Necron. When you have four factions in a book, you can't really fit a whole lot in. I mean, they only want to have so many pages in a book. So it makes sense that they're going to take, they might take two and pull them out so that they can put more in for those factions.
Yeah.
You got a good point there. But I still find it like this, like, was that a last-minute decision? Are they pulling? Was there a book after Pariah that they're now shelving? It's not going to go into White Dwarf. Who knows? I mean, as long as we get the rules, it's not a big deal. I'm really not the big upset about whatever format it comes in. It just was kind of an odd takeaway. It was like, oh, it'll be in White Dwarf. What? So anyway, I look forward to it. So.
On a personal note, I think it's okay for them to use White Dwarf to release rules and whatnot, as long as there's enough for everybody.
Right.
Yeah. They find a way because a lot of the times when they release like cool rules in a White Dwarf, like that White Dwarf sells out in like 2 seconds, and then you have to like wait for them to release it electronically or find some way to get your hands on it. I think that's my only gripe.
Yeah, the availability. Well, that's always been my gripe about like.
Oh, go ahead.
No, it's good.
Well, I'm just saying, say that with the White Dwarf being digital again, that's an option. And especially how things are now, we might be seeing digital White Dwarfs become a preferred thing for the next couple of months. I mean, we're slowly moving our way back to the next, that next cycle for April. Obviously, the physical White Dwarfs aren't going to be sent out, so I'm hoping we'll still see the digital ones. But I mean, who's to say? But
right. Anyway, so great way to get a hold of them. that might be our, I mean, that's how I got Saga of the Beast was digital. So maybe that is the best way to get them to the masses. Like I said, I'm assuming Necrons are the other force in the Pariah book. Love to see the Pariahs return. For those who don't remember what the Pariahs were from the old Necron Codex, the pre-Matt Ward Codex, basically they are the predecessor to the Lich Guard, and they had a psychic null, basically, in the lull. So they, and Eldar really found them terrifying, and they had the ability to shut down psychic powers within a certain radius, kind of an aura ability. So much needed. You know, it's definitely one of those armies that, besides the Gloom Prism, does not participate in the psychic phase. So that would be pretty nasty.
Think of a Calexus Assassin, but a unit of them in a Necron army, and they were really tough. The only thing they did lack was the Necron keyword, which meant, you know, they didn't come back to life, so they were hard to use. However, they were definitely really good if you knew how to use.
Yeah, they did not have the "we'll be back" function. So, but they were against the right matchup, and if you knew how to use them right, they were a nuisance. But I have to say, they were the old metal models, and they were a pain in the neck to put together. So I cannot wait if they come out in plastic. I remember all my staffs being like odd directions and stuff like that, the arms not fitting well together, and then you had to glue the little green rod into the staff. It was tricky. But I still have 10 of them lying around somewhere.
Well, I think what would be really neat for anyway them to do is to make it, instead of it being whole units, have them something where you have only have like maybe one or two in a unit, and then they can also make it a multi-part kit so that we can have plastic lords too.
It's not a bad idea. Kind of like a sergeant upgrade of some kind. That'd be kind of neat.
Or yeah, maybe like an upgrade, a sergeant upgrade for Necrons. In 25 years, we haven't seen that. I doubt that'll start now, but one can dream.
One can dream. Hey, we got lots of dreams here. I got a buddy who still thinks the enslavers are coming out. So, hey. All right. So that has been your latest preview. Gameswork did tease us. This was a bit of a surprise. They're taking next week off, which is not a surprise, being the Easter holiday next weekend. But the weekend after that, they'll be returning with another Saturday showing of previewed stuff. So look forward to see what else they still have to show, because they claimed they only shown us half what they'd planned to show us at Adepticon. So,
which is nuts. That would have literally been like an hour-long preview. Back to back to back to back, you know what I mean?
Or oh,
like
absolutely.
And being at LVO when they did like the preview for Abaddon and whatnot, that was fun. So I can only imagine how cool that would have been all at one go.
Yeah, I still feel bad for the Adepticon organizers, you know, to see that event just take a year off like that, because a lot went into it. But hopefully this will put things together for the rest of the year and make the other events stronger and bring back the event for next year. So definitely support them at that point. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we will get into a little bit of Saga of the Beast, and as well as a listener request right after this particular break.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Off the cuff, this is our thoughts on the Codex. After waiting for 8 minutes prior to recording, we thought we'd give it a week to digest, and glad we did. There's lots in there. But, you know, what are your guys' thoughts on what you guys found in Saga of the Beast?
War.
And only war. That's all you need to know. There you go. Good to go.
That's usually how that goes. Now, the Saga of the Beast, you know, for especially for Space Wolf fans, really excited to see like what comes out of it. And then for orcs, it's actually really neat to see, you know, like the lists that are already decent with the orcs, like get better.
Yeah, a lot of neat stuff. The subcultures really spoke to me. I think from super specialization. I think because whenever I see a competitive list, it's always three battalions, usually three different of the main cultures. So now I'm curious to see what they can come out with the subcultures, maybe bring in some units that have not seen the light of day on competitive tables. So nothing that blew me away in terms of like, oh, I've never seen that before. A lot of, you know, plus one this and plus one that, like we've seen in other books, but not seen it before in the Orc Codex. So I'll be curious to see how that all matriculates onto the tabletop.
I agree. I think it'll be, I think the especially now in this time of like isolation, when the meta is sort of like frozen in time, you know, when events get started and we start ramping up again, I cannot wait to see the kind of things that, you know, folks are going to come up with in this isolation. And the orc coda and the orc psychic awakening and the stuff in Saga of the Beast, like all those extra things that we're getting, I think are really going to like give people an opportunity to like to test and like just spitball stuff out there that might actually be really good.
I agree. The wood chopping should be really interesting to see, especially when I think of going back to the Space Wolves. That's an army that was really popular not that long ago, so there's quite a few people that still have the models lying around. And so a lot of those changes are, you know, can apply to the models that were once very popular. So I could see that kind of being a resurgence of the Space Wolves once again. So really neat stuff in there. You know, a lot of tweaks here and there. The return of the custom force field is probably a big thing for orc players. Thought that was interesting. It works in the assault phase now. It does not work on a vehicle, if I read that correctly, though. I think that was the old rule.
I know the working in close combat, I think, is a big deal, especially for, you know, things like mega armor knobs or just a bunch of boys. You know, being able to get those saves in close combat is incredibly powerful.
The other one I saw, which was, I think it was a subculture, it was kind of a sneaky version, kind of if you want to do the commando thing, which was an interesting break from the typical format of rules. If you're in cover, you get a 5-up invul, kind of like an old school cover save, how it used to be, rather than the +1 to your armor save, which I thought was interesting as well. So there are a couple of neat tweaks. The Gorkonauts getting +1 ballistic skill that could, you know, I'm sure there's another combo with that together to make them, that might make them viable with all those big guns. So,
well, that with the freebooters, right? So you can +1 to hit, and then you can freebooter it to get an additional +1 to hit. So then you've got Gorgonauts and Gorgonauts with like +2 to hit. And, you know, with the amount of shots they have, that can be pretty powerful.
See, this is why we bring guests on. We need quality content, quality insights like that. And there are a couple of relic guns as well. There are the custom jobs and stuff. But I just kept looking at those numbers, assault 15, assault 24, you know, number of shots. I'm like, holy crud.
Yep.
So, great way to, you know, when you start stacking on these extra to hit bonuses, that starts doing damage pretty quickly. So I would be very curious to see how all this comes up once we're all ready to commingle once again.
I agree. And then I think one of the biggest things that we're seeing with the Space Wolves is the use of Inceptors. I mean, the not Inceptors, the Transports, Impulsors.
Impulsors, yep.
Mm-hmm. They're definitely being, they are being a lot, very popular. 4 to 5 and then a bunch of characters that are just like crazy killy.
But you're also hearing a lot of talk of seeing Wolfen return in that same regard, you know, put them in transports, bounding out and just chopping things up.
Transhuman physiology on them to keep them alive longer. Thunderwolves getting like 2 damage, making them just that much killier. So, like, there's some really cool options. It's nice to see that they're finally, like, I don't know, I feel like they just have some really cool options.
So as you mentioned, with all this isolation time, one of our listeners asked us to kind of broach the subject with all this time off. What are some of our approaches to list design? So so you're sitting at home with all this new material or maybe dusting off an old codex you haven't looked at in quite some time. What are some of your list design ideas and how do you approach building an army for competitive play?
Well, recently, or actually, I guess a couple of months ago, I made a video on like my main theory on how I make a list. And it was like 5 different steps to building a list. And, you know, the way that I do it is a little bit different than some people do it. A lot of, you know, competitive players or players at home have different like strategies or concepts that they use when making a list. The one that I like using the most is like visualizing a list, putting out like my entire collection on a table, and then using like an old list that I've seen success with as the framework for my new list. So I'll sort of build out my old list and then kind of sub out units here and there to make a new list that's similar to my old list. I don't really like going too far from something that works. But sometimes I'll need to change it to kind of keep it fresh for myself personally, or to adapt to the meta as it ebbs and flows, essentially. Another cool concept I use is one of percentages that my dad developed called the Law of Nines. Goes way back to like third and fourth edition, where you know you could you had to have like 40% of your army was troops, and only 25% of your army could be upgrades, and you know, things that nowadays people would be like, "What the hell are you talking about?" And trying to split up my points as evenly as possible through fast stack and heavy support and HQ, so that I have a little bit of everything in my army.
It's funny you mentioned that. That was the old comp rule. So when you hear things like team zero comp and all that, that was actually one of your scores for competitive play, is how much did you use all the slots in your battle. But well, back then it was just one organizational tree. So that's where that came from.
Yes. Yes, it did. It was one HQ and two troops is the minimum. It was like your battalion, except it's just one HQ and two. And, you know, it basically gave you points if you had like one selection from each force org slot in your detachment and a whole bunch of different things. So, you know, that's the kind of thing that was, that I've always found intriguing, is trying to make a list work that has a little bit of everything. And it really helps because people look at your list and go, what the hell does like this list do? And, you know, if you can leverage that with play skill, that usually gives you an advantage, just because the opponent doesn't really know what your army does. When they've been reading all these meta lists, they're like, this isn't 60 intercessors and an apothecary. Well, how does this work? How do you win games with this? Exactly.
So do you sit like and look at like, okay, this is how I want to win the game type thing? Or you just look at more with these are the models I want to play with and how do I make the most out of them?
The way that I make lists is I go for a feel. It's a very intuitive way of building lists because I've been playing for so long. So it's a lot less about the math and the numbers. You know, yes, you have to have certain boxes that you can tick off. Like, can I kill a knight? You know, how do I deal with 150 orc boys or gene stealers or tyranid bodies? You know, how do I deal with a mechanized army? How do I deal? So you should be able to answer like a series of questions with a list that you build. And that'll dictate a lot of the time what units you put into your army. However, I never let the meta, quote unquote, totally, you know, determine what I want to put into my list. I want to make my list my own, and I want it to vibe well with me. Because if I put a list on the table and I have enough, like I put the models down and it just feels right, I'm like, you know what? This feels right. The amount of models I have on this table, the amount of units, they just, it feels right. And it's hard to explain that feeling, but that's a lot better than optimized list play, in my opinion.
Right. One of the things you said on the previous appearance on our show, and it's really resonated with me, is the number of repetitions that you get with one of your lists before you feel that it's ready for a tournament play. What are the things that you're looking for when you play with a list?
So I try and participate in the different phases of the game as much as possible, wherever possible. So, you know, in the phase of the game, you've got your movement, you've got your deployment phase, you've got your movement every turn, you've got your psychic phase, shooting phase, you know, charge phase, combat phase, and morale phase. You know, all those are phases that you can participate in some way or another. And when I'm building a list, of course, I want to build to the strengths of my list personally. So movement, being a Dark Eldar player. So I try and make sure that I'm a very mobile army. That usually offsets my ability to you know, participate in the psychic phase. However, you know, there's a couple of relics and or unit choices that you can put in, like any of the Inari characters in a Dark Eldar army, for example, or the Helm of Spite, for example, that lets you participate in some measure in the psychic. In the shooting phase, you want to make sure you can kill stuff with shooting. You know, I don't go for all-out shooting, however you can if you want, but I just want to make sure that I can kill stuff in the shooting phase. And then in the charge and assault phase, my armies always have some sort of ability to kill stuff in the charge phase, whether it's characters that are geared up for killing, or you know, things like units that are designed to tie stuff up in close combat, like witches. And then in the morale phase, you know, if you wanted to play to the morale phase, you could always use negative modifiers or things like that that allow you to kind of interact with that phase as well. So one of the reasons I've included Void Raven Bombers into my army is the ability to do damage in the movement phase, which is a big part of, makes up for the fact that I don't have a psychic phase. You know, being able to do mortal wounds with bombs, even if it's just one turn in a game, can really change the power dynamic of an area of the board that the opponent thought was completely safe. Or if they have a unit wrapped in close combat or whatever, and you bomb them with a Void Raven, all of a sudden the power dynamic changes in that section of the table, all in the movement phase, which can be very powerful for the flow, the ebb and flow of a game. So that's sort of one of the main things that I do. And then playtesting, just test. Like right now, Tabletop Simulator is probably the best way that you can sort of get a game in. You know, it doesn't replace an actual game of 40K. But if you have an idea that's itching at the back of your head, you can always reach out to the Tabletop Simulator community. There are lots of people out there playing games right now. Heck, you can even send me a message and see about playing a game with me on Tabletop Simulator. So that's something that I would be willing to do as well. But just test it out. See how it feels. See what it does. You know, you never really know until you've put it up against a tough matchup or two and seeing like what sort of, you know, what you can pull out of it.
Yeah, I just want to expand on that last point. Don't be afraid to fail. That's what practice games are for. Used to drive me nuts on the old forums. People used to put their battle record. You know, I'm 73-2. And I'm like, are you really? And who are you playing? I kind of prided myself that this is one guy in our local area. I am 2-17 against him. But those two wins were the only two times I played him in a tournament. Because when I show up on Friday night for regular gameplay, I'm trying to figure out the tweaks on the list. Those are practice games. I treat them as a tournament game. I don't, you know, try to figure out, okay, what's going to work and what doesn't work so I can know how to modify the list for when it counts. But don't be afraid to try stuff out. Especially if you take Skari's approach of trying to make your own list your own thing. And if you don't have your own thing, go ahead and take a net list and make the substitutions you want and see how that works for you. But don't be afraid to lose in a practice game at your local hobby store. It's, if you're in it for competitive play, you want to win the tournaments. You don't have to win every game. You can learn a lot from a loss.
You learn more from a loss normally than you do from winning a game.
So I know my league games are kind of in that point. And that's one thing I liked about our league. I got a shout out to Mark Whitaker there, who runs our leagues locally here. One of the things is once you log in your list on week two, you're stuck with that list for the length of the league. And it really forces me to figure out, okay, I can't make a random tweak here and there. I have to learn to win with the tools I've got. And when you can play a 15-round tournament with one list, you may realize that was the dumbest list I've ever written. But boy, you learn that codex inside and out. You know what works in an army, what doesn't work. And it just, that sort of level of practice makes you such a better player. So
agreed. I couldn't say it better.
Oh, well, thank you. Ray, what are some of your thoughts when it comes to list design?
I wish I could say that I really had a strategy when it comes to list building. Usually I have some units that I just really like to play with. Sometimes they turn out to be useful for games. Sometimes they don't. And I tend to just kind of build around those.
So you usually start with the rule of cool. And I think you're not giving yourself enough credit, because I remember once Ray and I played and he brought out a list. And I'm going like, what are those again? And I found it really hard that they ripped me apart pretty quick. And that was your Triarch Praetorians. That was a really great list, and it was very off meta. And it's one of these, if I ever get a free moment with this COVID-19 stuff, those are probably the first models that are not in my Trukari army that I'm probably going to build, just because that list was really shocking, really surprising. So, and it's just one of those, I like these models. How am I going to make this list work around these models? And you did it. I was like, wow, that was a really clever list.
Sometimes that's all you need is just the, you know, sometimes I'll build a list with someone and they'll say, this is the kind of list I want. And this is a unit that has to be in this list. And then you just kind of build a list around that unit, you know, and that's a completely valid way to get an army list up and running. If I wanted to build, or if I wanted to play a game with like my Talos or my Incubi or my Tantalus or like a specific unit as a core, you know, I build the list around it, and that's completely fine as well.
And that's always, sometimes I feel like I'm going down the rabbit hole a little too far, because there's certain units I gravitate to all the time. And then the internet tells me otherwise, that, well, that was a horrible choice. Those units are not competitive. But I'm like, sooner or later, I decide to see, is it a list building thing or is it a execution on the tabletop thing? Because some part of me goes, there's a way to make some of these units work. And you touched on a couple of them, right? So one of my strategies a little bit differently is, I'll keep it short because it's a little similar to what Skari said, the feel type thing. So for me, the one thing that's consistent about every game of 40K that you play is you as the person. And I used to do in my day job, I used to do one of my responsibilities. You know those personality tests you have to take when you get hired? Yep. I'm the guy who, from that particular company, I was the guy who would interpret those, and then we would go through our hiring decisions and figure out, okay, which position within our company is the best fit for this person, and how are we going to approach our training when this person gets onboarded based on that personality test. So it was interesting. So I just moved to the Phoenix area, went to a West Coast event because it was much closer than traveling all the way from Philadelphia, and got my head caved in. And I was just, what is going wrong? And I called all my friends. And they said, half of them said it's the West Coast meta. I was like, no, not really. It's the same old lists. And the other half said, well, you need to try this net list. And I was playing this net list and I played a couple friends and it still wasn't, I was losing even more. I was like, what am I doing wrong? And the long short of it was, just as you have a personality at work and your personality in your personal life, you have a Warhammer personality. And usually the three are pretty close to one another. How you want to play games, what feels right to you. And I was playing a list that was a net list that was very successful, that was completely the wrong feel for how I want to play the game. So did a couple online. There's what are called personality tests for chess players. Did a couple of those, got an idea what my personality was, and then asked around, what's the best faction that fits this type of play style? And they go, this. And Ray still makes fun of me to this day. That's how he became a Drakari player. So I always liked the models, but will it fit my game style? It's like, are you kidding? They are tailor-made for you. Great. Let me put together an army, and that's, I've stuck with them ever since. So I think the key thing is understanding how you want to win the game. Actually, do you want to win the game, or do you want to not lose? Do you, and then understand how that feels comfortable, because I'll do another example. I don't get to travel as much as the other guys on my competitive team, so I usually would call the sparring partner. So I'll bring the net list, and they get to practice against it. One game I was playing a net list, and it was highly proxied. I'd never played it before. It was a fantastic list, but I had no way I would ever be able to play it in competitive. There was just so many choices, so many options. I knew this wasn't a good fit for me, and that's something where I had a lot of appreciation for the guy who created that list. And to recognize it, just because it's a good list, it may not be a good list for you. So think about that. How do you want to win the game? Are you the type of person that just shows up and want to do a massive alpha strike? Do you need a turn or two to kind of get a feel of your opponent, in which case you need some durability to last that long? How do you want to win the game and then build an army to your personality and work backwards from there? And then from there, you got to look at, I do a little bit of math hammer and figure out what are the more efficient choices, but usually at that point, I've already chosen the unit, and now I'm trying to go back and forth between this weapon versus that weapon, you know, trying to, which is actually, and what role they're going to be used in. So that's sort of my basic macro list philosophy from there. And after that, repetition, play as many games as you can and make tweaks in and out. And last but not least, be honest with your performance. Wow, this unit did squat. It got blown off the table. Was that because you deployed it poorly, or did you, it's not living up to your expectations, or did you put it in the wrong situation? That's why I asked Skari earlier, am I using Drazar wrong? He's been good, but he hasn't been as good as hyped everybody says on the internet. Sounds like I'm using him wrong. So let me try a couple others tactics as I come in the next couple games.
Yeah, it also depends on, you know, as you said, like you're the one like constant that happens in the game. And it's one of the things you have to learn is, are you an aggressive player, a defensive player? Are you a passive player, an active or reactive player? You know, all those things kind of factor into the style of list you play. You know, some people love having 30 Thunderwolves or whatever, 30 Wolfen and, you know, 6 Thunderwolves and rushing their opponent. And that's a very aggressive style of play. But some people like hiding in a corner and just waiting for things to happen and blowing people up from far away. So, you know, you sort of have to put those units in your army that just vibe with you in that sense, and that you're going to learn how to use because you enjoy them, rather than forced to be using a unit in a specific way it's supposed to be used, even though it doesn't mesh with your playstyle.
Absolutely. So just make sure, you know, think about that ahead of time before you rush into buying a list or creating a list and going for it. And also, if you've got a good group, reasons why players on teams do better than solo players is they can go to, you know, bounce their ideas off of like-minded players, the people who know you. They can give you the criticism you need in a way that's constructive. And last but not least, you can, you know, I just want to try a list. I don't have all the models. You okay with proxying, you know, for this practice game? Yeah, sure. See how it works. And then you can figure that out. You know, one of our frequent contributors here, Don Husen, he comes on all the time. Everybody knows him for his crazy snowflake lists. I'm usually the guy he beats on first in the early versions. And he has a very interesting way of building lists as well. He usually thinks of a concept, maxes it out, and realizes at what point am I getting, what's the word I'm looking for? The return on investment is as high as it should be. He's got too many of this one unit. And then he keeps tweaking it to find out, okay, do I need 30 of these guys on the table, or can I get by with 25, maybe 20, maybe 15 in a character? If the character is eliminated, can I still function? Yes, no. Those are some of the things he does to make his list work. But yeah, some of his initial lists are completely wonky, and then he refines them. So by the time you guys see them on the big tournament stage, that list, and that's the other thing, by the way, he is a student of the game. He gets his reps in. He plays in tons of games. So when he says, this is my experience, it's not because he played one or two games. He's played more than it just seems like he's always playing a game whenever I talk to him. So he gets a lot of experience in. Right. So Scott, you mentioned Tabletop Simulator as another way to practice. Saul, you had a little bit of experience with it. What can you share with us on how to get practice games with Tabletop Simulator?
So Tabletop Simulator is a game you can acquire on Steam. I believe it's about $20 or so. I think they have a sale in it right now. It's like $11 or something. So you get it on there, then you can download like modules for different games through Steam directly. Those are all usually free fan-made modules. And one of them is a whole bunch of 40K like tables and models. I'm not an expert on it. There are people who know this a lot better than I do. So search for YouTube tutorials on how to get it all set up, make yourself an army, that sort of stuff. That's usually the thing that takes the longest amount of time, is saving like an army in the system, like your army list ready to rock and roll. Then you find somebody to play. You load your saved army into the game, essentially, and it shows up on like the table that you're going to be playing. And then you deploy your army and basically get to playing a virtual 40K game. In a pinch, it's good for visualizing the game. The sense of scale is a little weird because it is a virtual tabletop. So you have to kind of rely on the electronic movement distance measurement stuff. And rolling dice can be a bit of a pain. But other than that, it's good to throw a couple of hours, you know, practice your deployments and play a game with your friends while you're chatting on Discord or something. So that's something I've been doing with a lot of my coaching clients right now that are not getting a lot of games in. So it's a great tool. I'm not saying it's going to replace the game, but it's a good tool to have when you're trying to learn the game or having a fun game. I was recently in a 16 player knockout tournament with a Lord Marshall TV series on Steam. Twitch, and we had our first. Well, they've been doing live games every single day for the last week or so, and we just had my game. I played against Sisters of Battle player, and had great fun. It was a good time, lots of banter, and it was nice because they had a ref on hand as well that was literally like double checking measurements and getting dice out of the way and putting wound markers on the stuff that like our tanks and whatnot. So it was really smooth. And I've been having a lot of fun, just a different way of being able to get that 40K itch, even though it's not the actual thing.
I haven't tried it yet. I'm probably going to download it after the show. But I do remember Vassal. So and that was difficult because of the old two-dimensional view. How is this compared to Vassal?
Well, it's all in 3D, so everything's 3D, and a lot of the like terrain and stuff is rendered from like the Dawn of War series, so you'll recognize some of the structures and stuff of people taking stuff from Dawn of War and putting it into the actual maps and whatnot. So it's very creative. There's a really cool creative community taking like taking the models and putting them into the game and whatnot. And it's not like Vassal, definitely not that like 2D thing, even though that was really fun, what, like 10 years ago or whatever, when it was a big thing. This kind of takes that up to the next level, really. And it's quite neat.
Very cool. Any other tips or strategies for new players that you recommend?
Yeah, so something I wish I would have known when I started that I just learned is when you grab a model and you're going to drag it, if you hold the tab button down on your keyboard, it will show you next to the model how far you've moved the model. So instead of having to pre-measure the movement distance and then move the model, you can just hold the tab key down and move the model. Drag the model while you hold the tab key down. It'll show you how far the model has moved in, like, with the inches. It'll show you the distance, which makes moving 10 times faster.
Wow. That's a good hint to have, because, yeah, I can imagine guessing where the final... Oh, yeah, that'd be crazy. Okay.
Also, play with people who are, like, you know, that are... It's not, like, super accurate, because it's very hard to accurately... depict everything in like that other world with things bumping each other, whatever. So just play like more to intent than anything. And if you have that sort of same mentality going into the games will be super fast and super smooth.
Okay. In terms of missions and all that, is it the usual ITC missions available, or is that something you just have to play with your opponent as you speak to them? So.
Well, there are mission packs, so you can actually download like mission packs, like an ITC mission, where you can literally click and it'll have like different terrain setups, and then each mission will be there. So you click on the mission, it'll actually populate the board with like the objectives and whatnot, and then you have a different button that brings up the deployment zone, so you can just click a button and the deployment zone will be marked out for you. So it's very user friendly, and the score sheet's normally right on there, so you can keep score easily. There's a chess clock built in if you want to do that as well. Everything.
Wow. All right. We will definitely have to test this out over the week. All right. Get some experience with this. All right. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we will round out the show right after this. Does your game day fare leave your fingers orange or your game table pizza stained? There is a better option. You need the Necronom Nom Nom. Yes, that's right. The cosmic horror and great cuisine become allies of convenience with this darkly humorous, gorgeously illustrated, and simple-to-use guide to insanely good food. 50 recipes arm you with breakfast, lunch, and dinner, from drinks to dessert, and use unique grimoire of forbidden recipes. Don't tell the Inquisition, but you can tell your friends to find it on Amazon or wherever books are sold. Brought to you by the madmen of Red Duke Games, take the pizza shop off speed dial and treat your players to something new and delicious from the Necronom Nom Nom. All right, welcome back after the break. And normally this is the time where we go over the ITC top 10 and scores from last week's scores, which we should have talked about by now, as well as upcoming scores. But guess what? There is no activity in the ITC for the last 2 weeks due to the sequestration, quarantine, whatever you want to call it. So get your practice in, get your painting on, and try out this tabletop simulator. See if it's something that at least a good practice. Reach out to your friends from a safe distance and all that. So in the meantime...
Shout out to my pal, Devin Swan, number 2 in the global ITC rankings right now, considering it's going to be frozen in time for a little bit. So he's just under Vic. Devin Swan, you might have heard of him before. He's the, also been known as the Sack of F because, his performance at Adepticon, where he took a Sky Shield landing pad and put a Warlord Titan on it in 30K. So that set some people off, but we all love Devin. He's great, and he's been playing Grey Knights, and that has given him a good lead in the season. So I'm excited to see him crush some people.
Yeah, Devin's been a strong competitor for a very long time. I think this last season he got a little overshadowed by the Jim Bessel a little bit, but he's been one of Canada's top players for quite some time, as well as a force on the world market. So love to see him back on the top 10 and number two that caught up nicely done. So if you see, I'm curious, if you were number two and you're just waiting for this to end, I mean, that's going to be nerve wracking at this point.
Well, he's number two with 5 out of 6 events being able to be put on his score. So he's got plenty of room.
But I mean, you want to ride that hot streak while you can. And meanwhile, he knows everybody else is just sort of chomping at the bit to figure, you know, analyzing his list, how to take it apart. And oh, it's got to be frustrating.
We're all in limbo right now.
All right. Well, Devin, best of luck to you and as well as the rest of the ITC top 10 and the rest of you for listening. Again, Scar, what's the best place to find you if they want more of your intelligent content?
Deep, deep in the webway, you will find me on a place called Scardcast. You can always head on over to the YouTube page, Scardcast, and from there you can check out all the other links, if you so please, the battle reports, tactical series, and painting stuff, live streams, all that good stuff. Check it out. Join us, and yeah, have fun.
Thank you so much for being back on the show. You can hear from Murray and I between shows via our Facebook page, so check us out there. Any breaking news we'd like to put up there, as well as some ideas or other in news that happens between shows. We put that up on our Facebook page. You can check us out there. In the meantime, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
I'm Scarry.
And thank you so much for joining the Exterminatus podcast.